You are listening to the Be the Bridge podcast with Latasha Morrison.
How are you guys doing today? It's exciting.
Each week, Be the Bridge podcast tackles subjects related to race and culture with the goal of bringing understanding.
But I'm going to do it in the spirit of love.
We believe understanding can move us toward racial healing, racial equity, and racial unity. Latasha Morrison is the founder of Be the Bridge, which is an organization responding to racial brokenness and systemic injustice in our world. This podcast is an extension of our vision to make sure people are no longer conditioned by a racialized society, but grounded in truth. If you have not hit the subscribe button, please do so now. Without further ado, let's begin today's podcast. Oh, and stick around for some important information at the end.
Be the Bridge community, listen, I got a treat for you. Some of y'all are going to be surprised. Others of you are going to fall out your chair. But I have Mr. Tim Ross in the house, all the way from the basement, all the way from his book launch. We have him right here, up close and personal. He's in his basement. I'm in my so-called office. Listen, if you don't know about Tim, he is a professional podcaster, social media influencer, author, preacher, and businessman. I'm sure you've heard of his podcast, The Basement. If you haven't, you need to go follow it. And seen him on social media doing all the things. I was just telling him, we need some of your joy bombs right about now. You're refreshing to follow online. He just recently released a book, and it's called Welcome to the Basement, an upside down guide to greatness. We're excited to have you on the Be the Bridge podcast. Yay!
Latasha. I'm so honored to be here with you. Thank you so much for trusting me on your platform.
Yeah. I am so glad to have you. You are just refreshing. And one thing I know about you, just getting to know you over the last few months, is that you are the real deal.
Oh, thank you.
You are the real deal. And I appreciate that. You know, those of you who are listening, if you follow The Basement, who he is, that's who he is, you know, and I love it. I love how you love people.
Thank you.
How you are that cheerleader for people. You're also that challenger for people. And then in a lot of ways, you're that for those that you mentor, you remind them of that consciousness that they need to have, you know? I am glad to have you here, and your story in some ways is not like mine, but I mean some of our stories are similar in some ways, as far as how you started out in a predominantly African American church. You started out at Potter's House.
Yep.
And then you transition into Gateway Church South Lake.
That's correct.
You know, and
yeah.
Okay, so you know, you have this thing called, you know, coming in hot.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's me. It says, you're going to be honest, open, and transparent.
Absolutely.
Or I think Mike Tyree's it in the intro. He says humble.
He uses humble. He had to change it to make it a little bit his.
Yeah. But listen. I learning that about you, I was like, what was that transition like for you?
Well, as you mentioned, uh-huh. right, two amazing churches in the DFW Metroplex,
right.
Just about 30 miles apart. I would say I won the human lottery of churches, right? I won the church lottery. I got to go to like an amazing blackity black church.
Right.
And then like an amazing whitey church.
Okay.
Right. Uh-huh. And I never had to leave the Metroplex to do either one. And so I learned a lot of stuff from Potter's House. And obviously, you know, Potter's House is quintessential Pentecostal black church culture, right? Mm-hmm. And then Gateway is very traditional post-Baptist spirit-filled white culture.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people thought that I wound up in culture shock when I went from Potter's House to Gateway. Uh-huh. And surprisingly, what they found out, and they only could find this out when I told them, was that my response to, oh my goodness, what was it like to go from like a predominantly black church to a predominantly white church? And my response was, I felt like I was switched at birth.
Mm. Mm.
When I got to Gateway, I felt way more at home than I ever was at Potter's House.
Wow.
In terms of thinking wavelength, mm-hmm. and in terms of like approach theologically, uh-huh. I was way more Gateway than I was PH. Mm. So even though there was obviously there was a huge cultural difference in terms of ethnicity,
right,
and expression, in terms of like belief and thinking wavelength, I was way more Gateway than I was PH.
Wow. See, mm-hmm. that's what you see. You heard that here, and I think it has shaped you. And, really helped you. It's a part of the basement, like, you know, and we talk about the basement. Can you explain? I know some people haven't gotten your book. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But like, explain, what is the basement, and why do you call, you know, your podcast Welcome to the Basement?
Yeah. So the I was given a vision when I was 30 years old. When I was still the young adult pastor at the Potter's House. And, you know, a vision is not deep. Mm-hmm. A vision is basically a dream, but you're awake.
Right.
So I had this vision, and the nutshell of the vision, Latasha, is that there was a 100-story building. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the top of that 100-story building. And what I intrinsically knew is that everybody up top was a very significant, important person in the body of Christ, mm-hmm. but they were nameless and faceless. Mm. I couldn't determine who they were, but intrinsically I knew mm-hmm. this is a very important or a significant person in the body of Christ. But everybody on that 100th floor had compromised their character and integrity to be up there. They had some sin, some weight, some vice that had compromised who God had really called them to be. And so when I got back on the elevator to go back down to the lobby of this very tall building, I saw a B going down that I didn't see going up. And so I wound up going down 101 stories. Mm. And the people that had character and had integrity, again, not perfect people. Nobody on the top floor was perfect. Nobody on the bottom was perfect. But the people on the bottom, I wish I had this language earlier, because it would be in the book. Mm-hmm. But the what I know to be true now is that all of those people in the basement were congruent people. Mm. They were people of integrity. And I know we use that word a lot, but integral means that it's intact. Mm. It's together. When something is integrated, all the pieces fit and they're together. Okay. When something or someone is disintegrated, it means that things are not together. Mm-hmm. And so these people in the basement had a mindset to live as integrated people. Mm. Who you see is who you get. Mm. And so after I had that vision, I asked the Lord, like, what does this really mean? And he said, Tim, everybody thinks that the goal is to get to the top. Right. But I've actually called my people to get down to the bottom. Mm. What I now know to be the basement. And then he said, if Jesus Christ is the chief cornerstone, what floor would you want to live on? Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to stay down here with you, Lord. And he said, then get as many people to the basement as you can. Mm-hmm. And I was 30 years old when I had this vision. At the time, I just thought, okay, anybody I mentor or disciple, they're going to hear the same story that I just told you.
Right.
I had no idea that he meant it for hundreds of thousands of people and for it to become a book and for it to become a community. Mm. So I was not prepared for that.
And what is that community like? Because it's like, it sounds like just that same vision of, you know, how I came about with Be the Bridge. Like it was just, you know, dropped in my spirit and like from that. So what is that community? What has that community been like transitioning out of your pastoral roles transitioning into still a pastoral role, but an unorthodox, you know, pastoral role. What has that been like?
Yeah, so it's been an eye-opening experience, to say the least, right? After being in ministry for 27 years and, you know, getting a burden from God to preach sermons and to go from standing up preaching to sitting down potting, as I call it, and to be told and really instructed by the Holy Spirit, the same way that you speak in private when you mentor and disciple people, is now the way I want you to speak publicly.
Right. Mm.
That scared me to death. Because I was like, Lord, you know how I talk private. I was like, so I'm going to get canceled. And I felt like the Holy Spirit's response was like, go ahead and get canceled. And I guess in some ways I did, which hurt my feelings. But when I tell you, it introduced me to an audience that I would have never got in touch with. Mm. And would have never heard the gospel and would have never been open if I just kept that pastor's cadence that I had while I was a preacher. And so I have gladly made myself of no reputation and decided to go after what I affectionately call the highways, byways, bushes, and shrubs.
And I know what it's like, you know, Tim, like to be misunderstood. And I see, you know, I watch you, and you are such a lifeline for a lot of, you know, specifically people of color, but also I would say white people. I was with you. We were in, I think it was downtown Fort Worth. We were going to a restaurant and we're walking through there, and this guy stops you, this white guy, like at a bar, stops you and was like, man, I follow your podcast. Like, I follow your work. And it's like just unexpected. So it's like, you never know who's watching, who's following.
That's right.
And everything. Right. And you said this, I was listening. You said this, you said, I'm not for everyone.
I'm not.
You're like, and I may say some things you said that you don't like. And
that's
you're like, you can go and listen to all these other people, you name some people.
Yeah.
And you're like, but this is how the basement is going down. And,
absolutely.
And that was it. And you kept it moving.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, everybody, I feel like everybody, every human being on earth has a desire and a right to be seen, heard, known, loved, even if they're disagreed with.
It's good.
Every human deserves to be seen. Yeah. Every human deserves to be heard, even if you don't agree with what they're saying. Don't cut them off.
Right.
I mean, think about what our culture has produced, right? Whether we're talking in sacred circles or secular circles, we've produced talking heads. We have not produced listeners. We have not produced listening heads. People can't even get their full sentence out. That's why they talking so fast, because I'm trying to get my complete thought out before you cut me off with your opinion or what you feel. And so I feel like everybody deserves to be seen, heard, fully known for who they are, right? It's the B clause of Proverbs 4:7. I have everything kind of memorized in King James, but wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding. Right. I want to fully know you. So that means I have to shut up, right? Like, I have to fully hear you out and let the fullness of your thoughts be known. And once I fully know you, I can love you for who you are, where you are.
That's good.
So it's a beautiful thing to give somebody. And then we still get to have the self-differentiation to say, but I don't agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, I see you, I hear you, I know you now, and I love you, but I don't agree with you. And that's life. I don't agree with myself sometimes.
Right. And I love how you even talk about that when you said, I don't agree with myself. It made me think about, like, you talk about, you know, how you wrote a book before and you were like, basically you've reimagined that. And so you talk about, you know, kind of like put that book out your head, you know, because I know, I think back to even some interviews I've done and things I wrote, like, you know, 7-8 years ago, we evolve. We should be. And then there may be some things that we said or did that we're like, wait a minute, like, I have more wisdom now. I have more clarity. I would say that different now. I didn't think that. I like how you own that and you talk about that. Could you tell us a little bit about what you meant? You mean when you say that, like from your first book to now?
Yeah. So that first book was called Upset the World. And that's based on the revelation he gave me about, you know, the Bible being the most upsetting book that's ever been written. Mm-hmm. Jesus living the most upsetting life that's ever been lived. Mm-hmm. By definition, the word upset does not mean to anger, frustrate. Right. It actually means to turn over, to turn upside down. And so I believe that on January 14th of 96, when I gave my life to Jesus, my life was turned upside down. And I spend my life upsetting others. It's like the best, it's my privilege to partner with the Holy Spirit to upset somebody else's life. But when that book came out in 2020, it was fumbled by the publisher. Like, and you know, in a very, what I feel like providential set of circumstances, I was given full rights back to that book. And so when I was able to pray through the opportunity I was given by Nelson to bring this book back to the market, I realized that the full integration of this revelation of upsetting people would not be appreciated without the revelation of the basement.
Got it.
And so being able to marry those two main themes of my life and reintroduce this book is the thing I get to go around the country and promote right now.
Yeah. Like, as you guys hear this, like, Tim just launched this book. He's out there. He was, you know, in New York. He's, you know, promoting this book. He's tired. He has all these things going on. He's a dad, you know, he's a husband. And he's a friend and a brother and an uncle to so many and to so many. And, you know, just to be, you know, honest here, like, he's dealing with a loss, you know, you're you're actively dealing with grief, like so many of us, you know, one of the things you said, the other day when you were on, and Tim, it just resonated with me because I said the same thing the same way. I kept, after I lost my dad in 2021. And to COVID. And I remember just saying, like, the only thing I could say bringing the words is like, my daddy gone.
Yeah.
That's, and when, let me tell you, and I just say, and even now, I will say that, like, my daddy is not here. My daddy gone. And just like, and, and saying it just like that, because I say daddy, like that Southern, that's right. Daddy, you know?
That's and, right. That's right.
And when you said that, I was like, oh my God, it was like, it, my spirit just connected with you. Like, yeah, like, but it's like he's gone, but he's here.
Yeah. Yeah. He is gone. I like to use the word and as much as I can. I don't like using buts a lot. Ands are a great integrator. Right. It's a great conjunction to integrate, right? Negative realities. And so my as of the time of our, of us talking, my daddy died 5 days ago.
I know.
5 days ago. Not weeks, not months, days. And the last 5 years, the last 5 days has been like, it has been filled with grief and crying and laughing and a strange emptiness. But above all of those adjectives I could give the last 5 days, I have an incomprehensible peace.
Right.
Like I have been in church all my life. I've been saved for 28 years. I've been preaching for the last 28 years. And when I tell you, I now know what the peace of God that passeth all understanding actually means in the last 5 days. I'm not saying I haven't, you know, known what, like, but the last 5 days, I know that verse intimately
right,
now.
Right.
28 years into this walk, I realize, oh, I'm still learning about what it is to walk with Jesus, because this peace I have right now, I should be up under a bed somewhere. Mm. Sucking my thumb.
Right.
curled up in the fetal position with a bag of Cheetos or something.
Uh-huh.
But God has given me this incomprehensible peace. And so I understand what it means to weep in a different way than those that don't have hope. I understand what it means to grieve in a different way than those that don't have hope. And it is... It's a very surreal, almost eerie like feeling, because it feels like I should be in a puddle of tears, and maybe I will be, but right now it is just very peaceful. Above all else, above the grief, above the sadness, there is peace. Right.
Those two things can exist at the same time.
They sure can.
You know, and I think that
they absolutely can.
People don't sometimes understand those two things. I can have sorrow, but I also can have joy.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Yeah. Whoever came up with the word bittersweet deserves a raise. Like whoever, I don't know who was sitting up one day going through the dictionary and decided to take the word bitter and sweet and put it together.
Yeah.
But it's the perfect word to describe this season I'm in, because Saturday was bitter. My dad taking his last breath on Saturday was bitter. And this book tour is sweet.
Yeah.
And so I'm carrying the tension of those two realities.
Right.
And to your point, two things can be true.
Yeah. How do you see grief being a part of the basement way of life?
Oh my goodness. We embrace it, because, and here's the, I'll give you a more philosophical answer. Okay. Everybody's been asking me, how you doing? How you doing? And I told them, I said, I'm actually doing very well. I said, I've made a deal with my grief. Mm. Here's the deal I made with my grief. When it shows up, I will acknowledge it. When it shows up, I will give it space. I will not suppress it. I will not reject it. I will not ignore it. I will not try to act like it's not there.
Okay.
When grief comes, however it wants to come, if it wants to come through tears, I will give it permission to come with the tears that it has right then. If it wants to come through laughter, if it wants to come through reflective memories, however my grief wants to come, I invite it.
Right.
I'm not running from it. I'm not scared of it. I think Queen Elizabeth said, the price you pay for love is grief. If you give yourself permission to fully love a person and or a thing, then on the... When it gets to end of life, you are going to grieve it.
Right.
With the same way you loved it should be the same way you grieve it. And the amount of tears that you express actually are the treasured accolades. Tears are the treasured accolades of something that you really loved. Mm. It's not something to be choked back. It's not something to be held back. It's something to actually give.
Mm. Mm.
It's something to actually release. In the same way we give a round of applause to something we praise, we should give rounds of tears to something we loved and to someone that we loved.
Wow.
Ooh, that was good.
That was good.
That was good.
That was good. That was good.
That was from my dad.
and that's the funny thing. Like I tell people, and I know you're the same. I see this as you were telling stories. When I tell stories or tell jokes, it brings me so much joy because I have those great memories that I carry with me like a legacy. You know, and my dad was a jokester. So I'm always saying stuff and doing stuff. You know, if you yawn, and you know, my dad would say, he's like, save a us some air. Good Lord. Like, can everybody breathe? Like, you know. But those things, like, those things bring so much joy. So I my prayer for you is that God would bring to memory all those funny things, those wisdoms, all those things that your daddy did, that would bring you so much joy, that would give you fuel to keep going and to be all that God has created you to be. So I'm so thankful for you and
thank you.
And so grateful for you. So, yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Now, in your book, back to the book.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
You talk about vulnerability as an extravagant gift that you can never demand.
Correct.
You can only create a safe environment to receive it.
Correct.
That is important, especially in the Be the Bridge, our space. We say that, and this work that we do in racial healing, that we aim to create brave spaces, because what's safe for you may not be safe for me, you know?
That's right. That's
for
good.
Vulnerability to happen so that healing can happen, what are ways to cultivate those brave and safe environments? What does that look like practically to kind of create that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the prerequisite is what we talked about earlier, right? Seen, heard, known, loved, even if you disagreed with. And then there can be no healing where there is no safety and stability. The environment has to be safe, and the environment has to be stable. That is healing 101.
Okay.
I need a safe environment. I need a stable environment. I love what you said about what may be safe for me may not be safe for you. So the brave spaces that you have cultivated in our ethos, we would lead into those brave spaces with what we call courageous conversations, right? And prefacing them by letting them know that, hey, I need to have a courageous conversation with you. It's going to take courage for me to say it. It's going to take courage for you to hear it. So we're actually both being very courageous right now. We're both being very brave. And then allowing myself or that other person to be able to share what they have to say without having to put a lot of disclaimers in front of it. Again, I like people to be honest, open, and transparent, to be hot, to lead with that. And to also identify that human beings are very resilient. I think the reason why we haven't made more strides as it relates to racial, what I refer to as resolution, is because we fragilize people. Instead of stepping into conversations and saying, hey, this may hurt you, but you can overcome cancer. Like, I've seen people come back from stage four cancer. I saw a bunch of people survive Hurricane Katrina and go on to be millionaires and get new jobs and relocate and love Michigan, right? Like, so, like, I'm like, human beings have survived earthquakes and pestilence and storms and the early settlers that moved across the West and braved the Oregon Trail. I mean, we got, and we think what you about to say is going to devastate me. I mean, we got to get over that. Like, let me say what I got to say. Let me hear what you got to say. And however I feel about it, we can move on after that.
Right. Let us write it. Don't try to erase it, you know.
I say what I said.
We got to start from a place of truth. And we always say in our community, you know, there when we cannot heal what we conceal, you know?
That's right.
And we can't reconcile what's not recognized. And we know that in any type of relationship that we have with people, if there has been harm caused, we have to start with the harm, you know, like we have to start with that truth in order to move forward. So we know that conceptually about relationships, but when it comes to this discussion on race, it's like, we are so weak.
We are it's so pathetic. Weak,
and we're
it's
babies.
So
we're soft, you know.
And I'm
like, I need for us to be resilient, you know.
Yes,
I need for us to really put on the what you say some the big boy big girl pants.
Yes.
And really, that's exactly let's right. have this conversation. And, you know, that's what we do in our community. But I think that's also what I see you do in the basement. You know?
That's correct. Yeah.
I see you do
that's
that.
That's our whole...
Yeah.
Yeah. We give people, we create a safe space for people to give us the gift of their vulnerability, yeah. right? If they're safe, they'll give you mm-hmm. their vulnerability. Mm-hmm. If they're not safe, they're going to hold on to mm-hmm. it. And when they give it, we're not shocked. We don't gasp,
yeah.
right? This is the analogy I always like to mm-hmm. give. And I used to give this analogy a lot when I was a lead pastor, is we gasp about in church what a doctor would have a poker face
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
Right? Like we hear about somebody's testimony. yeah.
Right.
We act like we ain't heard about nobody's sin. Yeah. Like, did you read the whole Bible?
Right, right.
You know
right.
how much rape and
yes.
debauchery and murder
terrible.
And torture
terrible.
And slavery is yeah, in the Bible. Yeah. And you hear somebody's testimony and we got to know.
yeah. Yeah.
But imagine if you went to the doctor, right? You've been having something go wrong in your body and you went to the doctor and you got to put on the little outfit with your back out and sit up on that cold table uh-huh. with the little thin sheet uh-huh. on uh-huh. it. And then when he come in, you're like, well, doctor, I've been really feeling horrible. And I've been having this discharge the last four yeah. days. And the doctor goes,
yeah, you're going to get up out of there.
You would be like, I don't think I'm supposed to be in here.
Right.
I shouldn't have came to the general right. hospital. I need to go to I need to switch right, zip codes. Right, you know what I'm saying? Right. And so we have to be able to, even if you do feel like that sudden,
yeah.
like fix your face.
Yeah. yeah,
you know
yeah.
That we grew up with our parents telling us
you better
fix
act
your face.
Like you know. Like you do, you know.
You better act okay, maybe you haven't heard it. Maybe you can identify with that testimony. But don't let your face show
right,
it.
Right, right.
Because I mean, look, it took bravery for them to even get that much out.
Yeah.
If your face is already like, oh my God, it's like, well, I guess you can't handle the rest of what I said. That was just the starter kit.
Yeah.
So I'm for creating these safe spaces where people can give their vulnerability. And again, through being seen, heard, known, loved, we can just hold space for them. People need containment. Mm-hmm. We're too quick to give answers. Mm. Sometimes we give answers that the people didn't even invite us to give.
Right, right.
Because we want to have a solution, and sometimes we just need to sit with the issue.
Mm. Yeah,
we need to be people that are not so quick to get to the solution that we don't just sit in the pain of the issue.
Right. Mm.
You know what I mean? The most beautiful thing that people are giving me 5 days removed from my father's death is just their presence.
Right.
I already know the Bible verse.
Yeah.
Don't give it to me. Don't quote me Psalms. Don't send me to Corinthians. Right. Don't send me to Thessalonians. I don't care right now.
Right.
I miss my daddy.
That's right. Right? Yes.
I'm eulogizing his funeral. I already know the Bible. Right. Okay. Right now, just hold space for my emotions and you being present can be the most beautiful thing.
So
it is said of Ezekiel, I think it's around Ezekiel chapter number 3. Ezekiel says, I was taken up by the Lord and I sat with these people for 7 days before I said anything to them. One of the most profound things that we miss in Psalm 23 is that David said, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will feel no evil, for thou art with
yes.
me. Not talking, not encouraging, not reminding, just with me. Mm. And sometimes we have to learn how to just sit with his presence.
Mm. Your presence is heaven to me.
Mm. Right? Yeah. Simply your presence. Like, I don't need words where your presence is.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. I mean, but we don't like to sit with, because we don't like silence.
We're uncomfortable with
we're
silence.
We're uncomfortable with it. And, and lament, sometimes like lament, vulnerability, all of that is like, it requires the stillness.
That's right. In order for it to really ferment and get to the place where it's really going to do some good and have some medicinal properties mm-hmm. to it, I think silence is an acquired sound. Mm. In a world full of noise, Latasha, yeah. Silence is an acquired sound. Mm. It is a sound you have to grow accustomed to.
Yeah.
You have to be able to sit in it and just as uncomfortable it as it is. We do it on planes.
Yeah.
Every time a baby is crying on a plane, I don't care. Only the rudest of us would show our discomfort with a baby crying on a plane. Mm-hmm. Right? We learn that there's nothing we can do for a baby whose ears are popping.
Right.
And for air that's trapped in its ears or in its lungs and, you know, it hasn't burped yet or it can't get to sleep. Right. It's just too disorienting. The sound of that jet engine being in the air. And only the rudest of us would not tolerate the cries of a baby.
Right.
But the rest of us have learned, even if this is uncomfortable for us, we can sit in this for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And so some of us need to act like we're on a plane ride sometime.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
and just resign ourselves to the fact that there's nothing we can do about this right now. I'm just going to sit in it with you.
Right.
I just heard what you had to say, Latasha. It's horrible. Your dad died in COVID. Mm. I'm just going to sit in this space with you. Tim, your dad died 5 days ago. There's so much I want to say, but you know what? I'm just going to sit with you in the silence.
Right. Right.
And I'll wait for your invitation to speak.
Mm. Yeah.
But I give you the gift of my silence right now and my presence. And I hope that's enough. 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 And I hope that's enough.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Be the Bridge community. This is Latasha Morrison, and I am the founder and CEO of the nonprofit organization Be the Bridge, and the author of the book entitled Be the Bridge, and the host of this wonderful podcast. I am so glad that you are here. You see, Be the Bridge responds to racial brokenness and systemic injustice in our world and believes understanding can move us toward racial healing, racial equity, and racial reconciliation. This podcast is an extension of our vision to make sure people are no longer conditioned by a racialized society, but we are grounded in truth. We have provided this podcast as a resource to help cultivate courageous conversations and equip all to flourish. You will find interviews from a variety of thought leaders, faith leaders, and business leaders, as well as authors, artists, activists, and athletes. You will be encouraged. You will be challenged. But most of all, you will be changed. So go ahead and subscribe to the Be the Bridge podcast on your favorite podcast players so you don't miss out on any of these helpful and hopeful conversations.
At the beginning of the year, I lost my sister friend a day later, we were having an event and I was supposed to do a talk and I couldn't do it. Like, cause I couldn't prepare. Like it was just so much. Yeah. And I couldn't. And you know, sometimes you want to push yourself and make yourself, and I just didn't have it in me. And I just told everyone there, like, hey, I'm here.
Wow.
And I said, but you know what? I just want to talk about my friend.
That's what I did Monday.
Yeah.
Monday I got on Instagram Live. I talked about my daddy for 90 minutes straight.
I love it.
I just talked about my dad.
Yeah.
It was so cathartic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I love you being self-aware enough to know that I can't push past this.
Yeah.
And try to talk about something else.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, and that's that vulnerability. And this lady came up to me afterwards and she said, this was, I don't think you could have said anything else that inspired me or spoke to me to see a Black woman take agency and not have to be strong or to perform and just to say, nah, she said, that spoke to me more than anything you could have said. And I was like,
you gave her permission.
I know. And I was like, wow, I didn't think about that, you know, in doing that, you know, I really felt a little, if I'm honest, a little shame, you know, that I couldn't press through or I couldn't be strong enough because, you know, that's kind of like how you're groomed, like, you know, in society, you know.
Yeah, it is.
And to say no, time out, it was different. And, and I think about that with you, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I refuse to give something I don't have. As it relates to the emotional equity that I have to give right now, I will not use a credit card. I will only use a debit card. I will only give from what I have. I'm not putting nothing on credit. I will not cheapen my dad like that. I will not short circuit the life that man live by giving somebody on credit what I do not actually have in my account.
Right. You mentor so many people. Like, you mentor people in the basement. You've mentored people as a pastor, you know, as a dad. You know, reimagining what mentorship looks like is important at this time, you know, especially,
yes,
you know, like, it could really be important to people, you know, as we talk about racial literacy journeys that that we deal with. We do a lot of mentorship, you know, coaching of people. You do that. I have a couple questions to you as it relates to that. I know that you mentor and coach a lot of people. Who mentors and coaches you?
Jerome Lewis.
Yeah.
Robert Morris. Up until Saturday, Charles Ross. A guy named Chris Voss, Derek Gaunt. I have a quorum of people that I value and respect so much. Some of the names are known. Most of them are unknown. They've all been in my life over 20. The majority of them have been in my life over 20 plus years. And so they've seen me grow and evolve and change and progress. And they're the people that I value feedback and perspective and correction from. And encouragement from the most. Preston Morrison, Corey Miller. Those people are my that's my board of directors for my life.
Right. I love it.
They really are.
What is just a lesson in mentorship that you've learned that you can share with our community?
You will never be a good mentor if you do not give up your time, your money, and your proximity. You are not mentoring correctly if it hasn't cost you in those three areas. Wow. To be a really good mentor, to be a really good disciple maker, and I'm, again, my template for disciple making and for mentorship is Jesus. Jesus is Emmanuel.
Right.
He's God with us.
Yes.
He's not God FaceTiming us. He is God with us, right? Yes. He gave up divinity for it. He gave up proximity for it. And he gave up eternity for it. Latasha, I have to write that down because I've never said that in my life.
Go ahead and write it down.
Girl, I promise you, I have never said that in my life, and it came out of my mouth like I am smart.
That's
the Holy Spirit.
Yes, write it down.
I have never said that in my life. One moment, please. I have to write that down.
I know, and it's really good when you talk about God with us, like that that word with. I was just looking at this, that there's a Hebrew word called like, I think it's yada, but it talks about to have deep intimacy. So it's you know, with this intimacy to trust that God is doing and perceiving who God is. Like that, that's mm-hmm. So when we talk about mentorship, you know, being with someone, sitting with someone, there's an intimacy there that it requires, you know?
That's absolutely correct. It does. And so I got to let people in.
Yeah.
It is somebody being over at my house and I'm an introvert. I'd rather be alone.
Yeah.
It is me meeting somebody and for breakfast and the breakfast lasts 3.5 hours. You know, it is me flying to their city or them flying to mine so we can get some time together. It's me paying out of pocket because most of the people you mentor are broke and young and trying to learn something.
Yeah.
And you got a 15, 20 year head start on these jokers.
Yeah.
And so they can't pay for them eggs. You better be paying for them eggs. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, so it's, I mean, I watched through scripture, Jesus give up everything to mentor men that had nothing to give him in return.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Except the opportunity to live out what he deposited on the inside of them. That was their payback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their payback was to tell others what he told them.
Yeah. Reproduction.
And the truest, the best way to pay back a mentor is to actually follow through on the advice that they gave you. To actually live out what they gave up, their time, their resources, their energy to put into you.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm honored to go on this tour in the midst of my grief. Mm. Because my daddy put something on the inside of me that I'm grateful to share with the masses.
Yeah.
You know, I had to do a book signing at an airport terminal yesterday.
Right.
And it started at 9 and I was there at 8:30 because I am my father's son.
Okay.
My 23andMe got 20% white in me. That 20% white in me shows up on time.
Right.
I show up early. Ain't no CP time if there's Charles Ross involved.
That's love it. I love it. And you did that today too.
That's right. Yo, yes. Y'all ain't gonna be looking for me. Yeah, y'all ain't gonna be looking for me.
I love it. Man, I'm so grateful for you. You know, when we talk about this community of racial healing, you know, it's a different community. You know, we do some hard work. And I mean, right now, we're in the thick of it. Like a lot of people are feeling hopeless, discouraged, you know, in this, they feel like, does it really matter? What would you say to our community that's listening now that feels like, you know, that are feeling hopeless, that feel like, you know, all this knowledge, you know, that people don't want to hear truth. People are not interested. They're not interested in hearing about the sufferings of others. They're not caring for the other. What would you say?
Yeah.
What would you say to encourage this community?
This work is so worth it because on the other side of it, it allows you to hone your empathy skills.
Okay.
The reason why I lean into this work, both you and I could clearly just have a whole circle of black friends.
Yes.
Right? Just be completely pro-black everything.
Yes.
All black everything.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But I have the richest friendships with white people and Hispanic people and Australian people and English people and Singaporean people because I lean into the misunderstandings and I lean into the vulnerability of being ignorant and having and acknowledging I need to learn something I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
About you, about your culture. I'm learning Spanish right now.
Okay.
And so I can't tell you how how much I'm being corrected in the way I use an accent or in the way that I express a certain mm-hmm. word. And if I don't get comfortable with being dumb, mm-hmm. right? If I lack the humility to be ignorant and not know,
right.
then I'll never learn that anything
yeah.
new.
Yeah, yeah.
Like my white friends, my white friends are so enriched because of my relationship with them. Yeah. And vice versa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those are the white people we want every white person to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the black person they want every black person to be. And we could have never had that without each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I believe that we are called to do hard things in the midst of hopelessness. It would be absolutely disrespectful to Medgar Evers.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely disrespectful to Rosa Parks. It would be absolutely disrespectful to MLK, to Malcolm X, who might have been on opposite sides of the execution of how it should have looked, but they had the same goal in mind. It would be disrespectful to Charles and Maxine Ross, child. We ain't got to go back far.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one America generation. Be trying to use them. Yeah, one generation. They be trying to use them black and white photos to make it seem like it was in the 1800s. Yeah. Child, please. My mama is a walking civil rights movement.
Yes.
She was in the Alabama boycott.
Yes, yes.
Right? Yeah. She was one of the people that didn't get on the buses. Yeah. Like my mom was a little girl. My mama was, not my grandmama. Yes.
I know.
So it's like, this history ain't long ago and we should get over it. My mama can't get over it. She drank from a colored water faucet. Y'all gotta stop playing.
Yes, yes.
So to sit in that discomfort and to learn and to be ignorant and to grow and to take that knowledge and to use it in the spaces where we have power.
Yeah.
The way I explain white privilege to people is by explaining to them my flight privilege. Mm. They have white privilege. I have flight privilege. I have over 1,000,000 miles with American Airlines. I do not know what it is to sit in 31A, B, C. I don't know what it is to sit in a chair. A plane next to the bathroom. I do not know what that is.
It feel good too, though.
Listen, I'm in rows 1 through 4, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I have a meal. I have a hot towel. I have a privilege that people starting from the 8th row back don't have. Mm-hmm. I'm not giving up that privilege.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking white people to give up their white privilege either. What I'm saying is use that privilege. I can use my executive platinum status to help somebody in coach have the same experience I have in first class.
Yeah, yeah.
I may not be able to rack up as many miles. I may not be able to close the gap with the mileage in between me and them, but I can put them in those spaces and give them the experiences and let them know how to get that experience themselves. Mm-hmm. That's how you use your privilege.
Yeah. We and those are, and I love analogies like that because people can grasp those. You know, mm-hmm. we know that we tell people, hey, when you come to this work, it's going to be uncomfortable. You know, mm-hmm. so we have to embrace the discomfort in that. And even to words like, you know, right now, you know, DEI is a bad word. Everything, every year is something, you know,
year
is something that is, it was white fragility, white privilege, white race, racism, everything becomes a no-no. You know, there's only a couple words that I'm married to that I'm like, hey, be the bridge, as bridge builders, we're going to continue to say these words. But then there's some like, hey, I could change it up, you know?
Me too, absolutely.
I can cause them to get to make that point, you know? And I love this, thing, just understanding that, you know, I realized that we're not going to reach everyone, you know?
We're not
going to reach everyone.
Guess what?
Yeah.
You're not going to reach everyone with any visions of grandeur as it relates to racial reconciliation resolution. Just like a preacher ain't going to reach everybody with the gospel. Everybody ain't going to be into you. That's just the bottom line. That's the choice that we make and take as brave people with the bold message. Yeah. Jesus died on the cross off of a maybe. Yep. It's one of my favorite chapters in Welcome to the Basement. Yeah. It's called Off of a Maybe. Mm. He went to that cross off of a maybe. Mm. There is no, he shed his blood with no guarantee that we would appreciate what he did. Mm. And yet he did it anyway. Mm. While we were yet sinners, yes. Christ died for the ungodly. Mm. And so in the same way, the work that you do, you got to do it in the face of somebody that's like, I don't care what you say to me. I don't care what tools you bring to this corporation. I don't care how much enlightenment you try to bring to this organization. We don't want it. We give it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
We do the work anyway. Yeah. In the same way a chef, when he gets up in the morning and opens up his restaurant, he don't have a choice whether he wants to make the biscuits or not. Whether 10 people come in that restaurant in that day or 1,000 people come in that restaurant in that day, he has to flip them biscuits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I always told people, when it comes to the church or when it comes to my business or our organization and the movements that we want to have around vulnerability, we are open for business.
Mm. Yeah.
And if 10 people come in, we're going to feed them. If 10,000 people come in, we're going to feed them. But we flipping biscuits today. Oh, somebody going to get a biscuit.
Right. Yeah. And listen, I like to say at the end of the story, because you know what? The people who don't listen, the people who don't get it, their story will be, it won't be that no one ever told them. Their story will be that, hey, I didn't listen. And that's a whole different thing.
Listen. That's what Judgment Day is going to be about. Yeah, that's, it ain't like you didn't hear it.
Yeah. You know, as we close, Tim, what is bringing you hope right about now? What is bringing you some hope?
You know what? I was at Barnes & Noble's in Philadelphia last night. There was a line wrapped around the second floor for people to sign, for me to sign their book. And what's giving me hope are a bunch of people from around this country who are saying yes to being vulnerable, yes to doing internal deep work emotionally, yes to not being the victim anymore. It's giving me a lot of hope. The host at the Barnes & Noble's said, out of all of the authors that we've hosted for book signings, we've never had to get a box of Kleenex for the people that were waiting to get their book signed.
Wow.
She said, I've never seen so many tears shed, and it's moved our entire staff.
Mm.
And we are so intrigued now with your work. I've never seen people moved like this. But what's bringing me hope is that in city after city that we go through, people are actually doing that work. And we have to make an adjustment on what we consider a win. The first messianic prophecy given with promises, Genesis 3:15, the seed of the woman shall bruise the head of the serpent and he shall bruise his heel. It is 4,000 years before Jesus is born. It's another 30 before he starts his earthly ministry. And he ended his life with 11 devoted followers.
Yeah.
Not 11 million. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Not as we would say in the hood or the country, not 1,100.
Right.
Right? He ended his life with 11 guys devoted to him, not including the women, who were way more down than even the men. I just think we need to recalibrate what a win is.
Yeah. Mm.
Because what if after all of this work, it's only a few hundred people that really resonated with the basement message? Will I be okay with that? Mm. If Jesus could be okay with his 11, I better be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But whatever that final tally is.
Yeah.
Because if I think it's in the mass, we've seen the most successful things didn't come because it was mass. Mm. It came because it was significant and it actually changed people from the inside out. And so that's what gives me hope.
Yeah.
I'm wired in such a way, thanks to Charles Edward Ross, that it has never taken me much to be content. Right. Mm. It never took my daddy too much to be content.
Yeah.
And in the same way, I keep the hope because I don't need tens of thousands of people to resonate with what God has put in my heart for me to truly believe that this is the right direction to go.
Yeah. Wow. That's so good. So good, bro. How are you getting rest? How are you getting rest?
Sleeping. I was girl, I woke up from a nap to do this podcast with you. When I tell you I was sleeping hard, I had to set my alarm clock
to make sure I didn't,
there was drool and everything.
I love it.
Middle of the day, I was knocked out.
Well, good. I'm so glad that you're getting some rest in the midst of everything, in the midst of the book tour, you know, preparing the eulogy, all of the things, you know, you're getting some
rest.
Yes,
ma'am.
And so that's important. Thank you so much for coming on the Beat and Bridge podcast. I love it. I love it. Love you too, Brian. And, listen, you said, I think it was in one of your podcasts, you were talking about women in leadership and women teachers and pastors and stuff. And you mentioned, you were saying some names and you rattled off my name. And so some of my friends who listened to you said, he said your name!
I did, because we're actually friends.
And listen, I was like, I heard him say my name.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
It's so funny, man. I can't wait to see you. Just praying for you. I have my
Thank
book
you.
Here. Like, look, you know how people back in the day used to hold the book up. I got a whole lot. Look. Got the audible version.
That's exactly right. And I read it myself.
Yes.
For anybody that
you did.
Is an audio file, I read it myself.
He's reading it himself.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And that makes a difference too. That makes a difference.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I couldn't have nobody else read that book.
It's hard. It's hard to do. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it because people like to hear the author's voice, you know.
That's
and,
right.
And,
absolutely.
And how you communicate with your work. So we are grateful for you. I'm grateful that you have created, I want to say, the first thing that came to mind is like a third space for people.
Mm.
You know,
mm.
It's something different. It's unconventional. It's unorthodox, but it is helping people. You know, there's fruit. It's different. And this is the thing where I try to, you know, we have all these different Christian camps, you know, and these different views. And, you know, I think sometimes people like, I wish sometimes people, we could just pause and see what God is doing.
Yes.
You know? It may look different from the way you would do it.
Right.
You know, it may not be the way you would do it or how God has called you to do it.
Yeah.
But different doesn't mean wrong.
It doesn't. I mean, I'm so glad you said this because, and I know we're trying to wind down.
You're good.
But I think about the fact that there is a president who presides over the United States of America.
Right.
But really, it is the governors of individual states that are in tune with what that state needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the governor presides over the entire state. But then you have mayors that have oversight over cities, and they know what the people in those cities need.
Right.
And so I'm just dumbfounded.
Yeah, yeah.
That one pastor or one denomination thinks that they know what the whole body of Christ means. And that they're actually trying to walk around like they're the president of Christianity.
Yes, yes.
It is wild and egregious.
Yeah, yeah. We all need to come to the table.
We do.
And sit down, because I mean, it's a cliche, but it's like we are better together.
And there's a way, I promise you we are.
There's a way, if we can find out, especially, I would say, I want to say Black people in this. I'm not going to say, I'm not going to say BIPOC. I'm going to say Black people. If we can find a way to work together and to build community together, there's something to learn from what we've seen historically our people do. That is our strength.
Yep, it is.
Our oneness is our strength. And I just, that is some of my prayer, what I'm seeing is like stopping these silos. So that's why I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
We are all doing different things, but I'm glad to be in communities with people that are doing different things. And some groups I'm in, they're doing the same thing, but building this collective oneness,
yeah,
we may not move the same,
yeah,
but we can be here for one another and help each other win and challenge each other and pray for each other. And there's something to that. And that is my prayer for us and the communities that we're building right now. They may be different, but God is at work.
He is. And I love the work he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it takes all types to reach all types. And so I'm for it. I am for it.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you
for coming on here. Get you some more good sleep.
I will. I promise you.
Eat you a good meal and continue to drink your water. I saw you with the big jug up there.
I need a gallon a day to be okay.
Gumming that water. I was like, you make my little cup look my little cup look so small.
Cause it is.
But I got this other see, I was rocking with these Stanleys. Like, see, nobody don't know nothing about this kind of Stanley.
That Stanley, that looks like you need to go down a coal mine with a canary.
This is before Stanley was popular.
Yeah, you working with some West Virginians. You in a coal mine.
With that Stanley.
You an OG Stanley girl. That's a teapot. That's a whole kettle.
It's a whole teapot. Oh, oh my goodness, you know you're a mess. I love you, bruh. And
I love you too.
I'll be checking in on you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Be the Bridge podcast. To find out more about the Be the Bridge organization and or to become a bridge builder in your community, go to bethebridge.com. Again, that's bethebridge.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, remember to rate and review it on this platform and share it with as many people as you possibly can. You can also connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today's show was edited, recorded, and produced by Trayvon Potts at Integrated Entertainment Studios in Metro Atlanta, Georgia. The host and executive producer is Latasha Morrison. Lauren C. Brown is the senior producer.
And transcribed by Sarah Knatzer.
Please join us next time. This has been a Be the Bridge production.